From 2820 Radio in Philadelphia, it's The Build. Conversations with entrepreneurs and innovators about their dreams, their triumphs, and their challenges.
Stretch. In our world of work, we often find we have to stretch ourselves to manage change. For industrial engineer and climate change policy expert Shannon Binns, his stretch happened when he moved from Washington, D.C. to Charlotte, North Carolina. That city experienced a major rebound after the financial crisis of 2008, and yet Shannon observed a lack of central planning for how the region was preparing to handle a surge in population, business, and development. So Shannon stretched himself, first by organizing conversations about the city's sustainable growth plans. That action stretched into something new, a shared vision between city, state, education, and business leaders. And for Shannon, the biggest stretch of all, the launch of an organization dedicated to ensuring that all those stakeholders would remain true to their shared goals. It's the story of Sustain Charlotte, coming up next on The Build.
The Build is made possible with support from 2820 Press, providing business consulting and content strategy services to customer-obsessed companies nationwide. More information at 2820press.com.
It's The Build. I'm Joe Taylor Jr., joined today by Shannon Binns, founder and executive director of Sustain Charlotte. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much. It's great to be here. Happy New Year.
Thank you. You as well. So for folks who are not familiar, Charlotte is possibly one of the fastest growing metropolitan regions in the United States. And you moved down to Charlotte in 2007. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Tell me a little bit about what attracted you to the area and what some of the things you observed were inspiring you to found Sustain Charlotte.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I moved here because I have family, a sister in Charlotte, and then other family in the Carolinas. We're all from the Midwest, but I was kind of the last to migrate down here. So family was actually the draw initially. But, you know, I tell people all the time, I had really low expectations for Charlotte. I think as a Northerner, I fell in, you know, we have stereotypes about the South as being, you know, backwards for some of us, or, you know, behind the times. I certainly had held all those stereotypes. So let's just say the bar was really low for me coming down to Charlotte, and I was very, very pleasantly surprised. And I moved down here sort of as an experiment to see if I could live closer to my family. I'm not thinking it would probably work for me, but I might as well give it a shot. And quickly finding Charlotte to be a very exciting place, in part because of the super fast growth that you referenced.
But I will say, I lived in Charlotte from 2006 to 2008, and I think I saw the beginning of that surge. And by the time that we had moved back to our hometown of Philadelphia, keeping close touch with folks that are still in the area, I've been watching from a distance as new mass transit, new approaches to what's going on in what we call uptown, which is the city center, have really been transforming the center of this. But I also am aware that Charlotte is not just the city at the center, but it really encompasses a large amount of land in this metro region.
Yeah, well, the city itself is 300 square miles, which is, you know, very, very big, even by American city standards. And then, of course, as you say, we've got obviously a metropolitan area that encompasses, in our county alone, you know, six other towns, and then we've got the surrounding counties. And we've seen explosive growth in the county and the surrounding counties. So, yeah, I mean, we are, depending on who you ask and when you ask them, we're often cited as one of the top three fastest growing metros in the country.
So walk me through the process from the time that you moved to Charlotte to the moment you start to think there might be an opportunity here for an organization that helps this city think a little bit differently about sustainability.
Yeah. So I moved here when sort of just before the recession in the housing bubble popped. And so, you know, there was cranes everywhere and we were growing, you know, in a breakneck speed. And I was living in an area of Charlotte called Ballantyne, which is kind of the most suburban part of Charlotte, fairly new part of the city, quite far from the city center, probably about 10 miles. And, you know, I hadn't owned a car in 10 years from having lived in DC and New York City and Seattle. None of those cities did I need a car. And then I moved down to Charlotte into this very suburban part of the city. And after, I don't know how many months, but maybe a month or two, three, I broke down and had to buy a car. And it was a very painful decision for me. I didn't think I'd ever own a car again. I liked not owning a car, felt good about not owning a car, but I was literally, sort of landlocked in that part of the city because there was no transit service. There weren't sidewalks on most of the streets. Even if there were sidewalks, things were so spread out. Walking wasn't a reasonable thing to do. There was no bike lanes. And so that was part of it. And on top of that, I read an article, I think in 2008, shortly after I'd been here, about the declining tree canopy in Charlotte. Charlotte, you know, unlike a lot of major cities, is not on a body of water. And so the natural feature of Charlotte that makes us somewhat unique and that, you know, makes it a beautiful city is we have an incredible tree canopy. Almost 50% of the land cover in Charlotte is trees, or short of a city and a forest. But that number was declining rapidly, double-digit loss of tree canopy in just the span of a couple of decades. And I read that article in our local paper, and I thought to myself, wow, you know, this is an unsustainable path. Where's the organization that's really advocating for a more efficient pattern of growth, you know, that doesn't decimate the tree canopy, that makes it possible for people like me to not own a car? And when I looked around, there didn't seem to be an organization that existed. So I started thinking maybe I could kind of create this organization, although I really wasn't thinking of it as an organization. It was the initial name for it was going to be called Charlotte Citizens for Smart Growth. And it was just going to be a sort of a hobby, if you will. I had a job. I wasn't looking to create an organization or a job, but more of a, on the side, I'm going to just kind of create a unified voice for smarter growth. And it just evolved very quickly and sort of snowballed into an actual organization that, we ended up deciding to call Sustain Charlotte.
So tell me a little bit about what that snowball was like as you were experiencing it. Did you have to ramp up staff quickly? How did you get from you just having this concept to you building a team of people to support this mission?
Yeah. So the first thing I decided to do was I felt that it was important we have a different vision for the future of Charlotte. And so I decided to hold what I called a visioning workshop. It was called Charlotte 2030, a sustainable vision for our region. And I really, started to cultivate an invite list of people who I felt were already working on the issues that we wanted to be part of this vision. So sort of the local experts and who were working on transportation and the folks who were working in the building space and, water and energy and so forth. And, this turned out to be an event that I put a lot of my personal time in, so sort of outside of work, but I really cultivated, the right people in the room, so to speak, meaning I was able to get our mayor to do the keynote as well as the chair of our county commission and was very intentional about getting a diversity of people in the room who represented the for-profit, the nonprofit, academia and government in a fairly equal mix across a whole range of issues. So I don't think that had happened much in Charlotte before, where you got lots of different people representing different organizations in the same room, keynoted by local elected officials, and so that everybody essentially that I asked to come came, I made sure to let the media know, and so we got a lot of media coverage and good turnout. And what resulted from this evening, two or three hour workshop was I turned it into a booklet called Charlotte 2030, a sustainable vision for our region, and held a press conference. And that caught a lot of attention. We were able to get a lot of media to that event. And I think we got covered by 10 different local media outlets. And all of a sudden, you know, it was a thing. But even to take a step back, when I organized that visioning workshop, I realized in order for people to RSVP, whether they were coming and get information about the event, I needed a website or at least a splash page. So I threw up a web page really quickly. And on the web page, you know, there wasn't much content at that point. It was basically information about the event, but also there was a sign up, you know, if you want a contact page, if you want to contact Sustain Charlotte, click here. And the emails just started rolling in from people who wanted to get together for coffee and talk about Sustain Charlotte. And of course, it was just me doing this as a side project. And I actually got more email from people wanting to meet than I had time, you know, in the day to meet with. So I ended up having to ignore a lot of those emails in the early days, which told me people were really hungry for an organization like this.
Yeah, I think, I mean, what I find is remarkable, and it strikes me that this is something that is, it telegraphs to me the kind of place that Charlotte is, that it sounds like you found a lot of buy-in and a lot of acceptance for this idea. In many other places, I would have expected much more resistance or maybe indifference. It sounds, though, that you kind of put up the signal and a lot of folks saw that it resonated with them. Mm-hmm. And in this particular instance, what they needed was a convener to pull folks together. So walk me through how this transitioned from side project into full-time gig. At what point did you realize that this was going to be where you're spending most of your time?
Yeah. Anyway, I think you're absolutely right about that observation. I think that's spot on. You know, it was a bit of a transition. It didn't happen overnight. You know, that was that event I mentioned, the visioning workshop, was in April of 2010. And then, you know, as the year went on, I kind of spent the summer refining the vision and getting input from other people who couldn't make it to the in-person event. So, you know, over several months, we refined the vision. I had it professionally designed, so it looked really good. And then we had that launch event with the press conference, I think in November of 2010. And then, you know, I think over the course of 2011, you know, we tried to incorporate and kind of create an actual organization. But the reality is I was still committed to a 40-hour, you know, a week job. So I was just doing, you know, sort of meetings as I could, but, you know, hadn't made that commitment yet to this is going to be what I do all the time. So I had a livelihood, so to speak. You know, I had this job, so I didn't need to raise money. I didn't have, you know, a goal at that point to create, again, really an organization with staff. That really wasn't my purpose at that point. What happened was, I think in early 2012, you know, I started to scale back my hours at my full-time job. I had a very understanding boss who knew what I was doing, knew what I was up to, knew the moonlighting that was going on. He was very supportive. I think, you know, that had a lot to do with that. I think he could have easily come down on me. I worked from home for him. So, you know, I could moonlight during the day and he really wouldn't know, but he knew. And yet, instead of saying, you need to cut out that side project, he really helped support it and encouraged it. So he let me scale back my hours for him from 40 to 30 to 20 while I scaled up, you know, my time to, you know, working on Sustain Charlotte. And then there was a little bit of a push in that, you know, that organization I was working for full time, we lost some funding and he had to cut myself and the rest of our team back literally overnight to half time. And that was a wake up call. I said, okay, you know, this thing I'm doing outside of Sustain Charlotte is no longer a full time paying gig. Maybe I need to, you know, tear the Band-Aid off and, you know, jump in here and try to make a living at doing Sustain Charlotte rather than it being a volunteer gig. And, you know, having your salary cut, you know, we'll do that, I guess. We'll help give you that push. So that was really, really when that happened. And that was in 2012 that I sort of cut the cord and essentially told my board, look, I want to continue to spend all this time on Sustain Charlotte, but now you're going to have to pay me because I don't have another source of income. I'm quitting my other job. And that's when we started to shift and think about raising funds and, you know, doing the things that real organizations do.
Sure. And so tell me a little bit more about your funding model, because I understand that you've got kind of a hybrid mix of you know, the expected grants and other funding that comes in. But you also do, as an organization, some consulting work that keeps the mission going.
Yeah, we have a very diverse stream of revenue. And I think that was a little bit out of necessity. You know, I founded this nonprofit at about everyone, you know, kind of laughs and when they hear when I started it. I mean, I it was in the heart of the recession. So foundations were pulling back, individual, you know, giving was sort of declining. People were pulling back during the recession. So I didn't have a lot of people ready and willing to write checks for this idea. I didn't have any early investors, if you will. I didn't get my first grant until I'd been knocking on doors for, I think, over 2 years. I was getting lots of no's, but, you know, I really believed in this and I knew there was other people who saw the value. I just hadn't found that investor yet, if you will, or that donor. And finally found a donor in Wells Fargo. Wells Fargo has a big presence here in Charlotte. We're sort of their East Coast hub or HQ. And they're very generous here in Charlotte with their philanthropic giving. And they gave us our first $15,000 grant, which is our first grant of any size. And I literally had tears when I got notice of that grant, because I'd been trying so hard to get funding for this idea. So that's how it started. We're still to this day about 50% grant funded. And then the other 50% does come through a variety of sources. We have a number of events where we seek sponsors and sell tickets to. We have an individual membership program for people to donate as individuals. And then we have a corporate membership program for companies to make donations and be recognized as a partner. So, and then as you mentioned, we do a little bit of fee-for-service work. That's a smaller part of our revenue, and not something we're doing a lot of right now, but we have in the past. So yeah, lots of different ways to raise money. And again, it was sort of out of necessity because, you know, we did not have the big seed grant or, you know, angel investors in the beginning. It was really having to scrape together little bits of money from lots of different sources to get this off the ground.
So having scrapped all of this together and now building momentum, tell me a little bit about the shift from that original vision statement you released to operating under a more steady state environment. Are you tracking milestones against that original statement, or have you had to iterate it? How are you communicating what your vision of Charlotte can look like to all of your stakeholders?
Yeah, that's a great question. We definitely set out to do what you said and kind of report back on progress towards the vision. I think, you know, the closest we've come to that is, well, there's a couple things we do. So one of the first events we started was what we now call our Charlotte Sustainability Awards. We've done it 7 years now. So every April we convene this event, and we recognize those individuals and those organizations who are moving us towards that 2030 vision that you know, we convene people to create back in 2010. So I'd say at least once a year, we sort of remind people of this vision and really highlight those folks who are moving us towards that vision. So that's one of the ways we kind of connect back to the vision itself. The other thing we did in 2014 that we're going to be doing again this year is we issued the first ever sustainability report card for our region, where we looked at those same sort of nine issues that we looked at as part of the 2030 vision, or very close to it. And we kind of did an assessment and tried to have it be, you know, not tried, it was very data driven. We looked at actual data and we developed our own methodology to assess our progress on the sustainability front, using some best practices from other cities. And that included, of course, not just a report card on how we're doing, but recommendations. And we're planning to update that, do a 5-year update on that 2014 report card this year, now that we're into 2019. So those are a couple ways we're kind of circling back to that bigger vision. But you know, there's lots of other things we do that, you know, probably are in the vision, but we don't necessarily tie back to the vision. We have a number of programs that we do, some of which are funded through grants that may last for a year or a year and a half. And that programmatic focus, those programs, I should say, change a little bit from year to year. And it depends a little bit on where the opportunities are, you know, that particular year. We try to be responsive to needs in the community as well as what can we find funding to do. There's obviously a lot longer list of things we'd like to do than there are people willing to fund it. But, you know, I'd say we're still evolving. We're still trying to achieve that steady state. I don't think we're totally there yet, but it gets a little bit easier each year, or a little closer each year, I should say.
I think one of the things that strikes me, again, given that part of your milestones each year involve awards and report cards, is that you really are openly tracking the progress of the community toward some shared goals. What's your sense of how that's evolving, even as so many more people are moving into the community? Are you finding that folks are coming to Charlotte with sustainability in mind as a goal, or are you having to cover that ground again and again with new waves of potential constituents and stakeholders?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know if we've really met, you know, we haven't objectively measured that, but I think, you know, there's demographic shifts happening that I think are favorable for us. You know, millennials and you know, Gen Zers, I mean, the younger generations tend to want the types of things we advocate for more so, not exclusively, but more so than older generations. So there's a lot of millennials moving to Charlotte. And obviously, you know, millennials are becoming more dominant in terms of the workplace and just a larger growing, you know, percent of our population. So there's some natural demographic shifts that are supporting us, and just examples of that, you know, as an organization that, you know, our focus is really around smart growth. So while we talk about lots of different issues, most of our projects and our events are really focused on the built environment. So, you know, wanting to build, you know, the idea of building the city in a more compact way where it's easier to bike and walk and ride transit, you know, land uses are jumbled together and you can, you know, get to places you want to go. Without having to get into a car, that is the type of environment or the type of built environment that more and more people, millennials and younger, are wanting. And so, you know, to answer your question, I think some of that's happening naturally, but that isn't to say we still don't have to constantly, in various ways, you know, inform people about, you know, what is smart growth? What is sustainability? Why is it important? That's still a big part of our mission.
I'd love for you to speak a little bit more on the role that you play as someone that's able to convene folks from lots of different sectors. I often speak to folks on the show who either come from a more strictly entrepreneurial background, or they may come from the military or from politics. But the thing that strikes me about this is that you've got stakeholders that are in each of these silos: education, big business, small business, politics. What have you found that's working for you that enables you to be able to effectively keep all of these different folks pulled back to the center so that you can be effective with your mission?
Yeah, another really great question. I do think that's one of the more important roles we play. And we sometimes, I think, forget that, you know, it's that convener role is really important. And that was definitely, as you noted, our first event was really just being a convener. And there was a lot of impact that came from that. And again, I think we sometimes forget how important that is. You know, I think it's one of those things where we have, it's partly we just have the ability to do that. And what I mean by that is, you know, other organizations, I think, often are constrained in this regard. I mean, if you're a corporation, you know, you know, that's not necessarily in your business model to be a convener, right? I mean, your goal is to, you know, provide whatever product or service that it is you provide, and do it at the least cost and the most profit, you know, generally speaking. You know, if you're government, you have obviously a lot more constraints about what you can and can't do and what you can and can't say. And while government often does play a convener role, they have limitations in that regard, and they have to worry about laws and liability. And we don't have a lot of those constraints. And we can literally, you know, at the spur of a moment, pull together an event, invite lots of different people, and not have to really think, worry so much about the consequences. You know, is this going to upset our constituents? Is this going to upset taxpayers? Is this going to upset, you know, our stockholders? I mean, we don't have to worry about those things. So I think part of our ability to do that, just due to the nimbleness of our organization as a nonprofit, as a small nonprofit, we can be very nimble and we can do lots of things that larger organizations can't do.
Tell me a little bit more about the distinction between conservation and sustainability, because I've observed when I talk with business owners about sustainability, sometimes folks have this notion that it means someone's going to tell them they can't do something or they have to be constrained in a way that they can't grow the business. And my understanding is that there are ways that you can coach businesses to grow sustainably if they have a certain mindset around that community mission. Do you find that same thing? What do you find when you're speaking with business stakeholders?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's a lot of, we get a lot of support from businesses and business owners. You know, I think there's a whole spectrum of thought on that. I mean, I think, you know, generally, you know, obviously the ones who are supporting us, they get it and they see what we're doing as compatible with their businesses. And, you know, you look at some of, for example, some of the biggest companies in Charlotte, like, you know, Wells Fargo and Bank of America, even Duke Energy, you know, they have embedded sustainability into their organizations. I mean, they have sustainability staff, they have sustainability goals. In many ways, you know, we have businesses here in Charlotte who are ahead of the local government on the sustainability front, and aren't necessarily being pushed in that direction. So that certainly helps. But, you know, I was just talking to an entrepreneur over lunch, a business owner who comes from, you know, like a lot of people here, he came from Bank of America, started his own business. It's a real estate business. And, you know, as he pointed out, he has embodied sustainability practices in his business because it's more efficient. Sustainability is really about being efficient with resources, whether it's, you know, a fixed resource like land and using that land more efficiently, which is really what smart growth is all about. Or in the case of this business owner, you know, he has water saving, conserving devices in all of his rentals because he's the guy that pays the water bill. And he's put programmable thermostats in all of his rental units because he's the guy that pays the electricity and gas bills. So I think what we try to highlight is that often sustainability is, at least the environmental side of sustainability, is good, not just for the environment, which is sort of the obvious benefit, but it's also most of the time economically better than the unsustainable path, if you will, as well. At least if you're the person paying the bills.
So thinking a little bit into the future now, as you head into your second decade in this organization, what's your big goal for 10 years out from now? Especially as we're getting close to that original 2030 vision destination, is there a point at which you roll out the banner and say, we did it? Or does it just continue to evolve? What's your dream for Sustain Charlotte over the next 10 years?
Well, I think that, you know, we are going to be reevaluating what the next 10 years look like for us fairly soon as an organization. We created the 2030 vision, as we've talked about. We had a 2020 vision for our organization as well. What I would say is that, you know, over the next 10 plus years, Charlotte's going to continue to have, you know, significant growth. We're expected to add 400,000 or so people by 2040. We're adding about 50 people a day on average. So I don't think the need for smart growth is going to abate anytime soon. If anything, it will probably become more critical. Will there need to be a third-party advocacy organization like ours? It's hard to imagine that that would not be needed in 10 years, but hopefully it will be less needed. Hopefully we'll have put in place plans and policies that are inherently supportive of smart growth. We're not there yet as a city. We're just undertaking the beginning of a new comprehensive, you know, planning process. Charlotte hasn't developed a comprehensive plan since the 1970s. So, you know, a lot of the growth that we've experienced over the last few decades, I don't want to say has been unplanned, but it hasn't been planned with a particular vision in mind. And we're our city has realized over the past year we need a real vision and a real plan around how and where we build things. So my hope, you know, and that's called Charlotte 2040 is the name of that plan, which will be developed this year and into next year. So hopefully that plan will embed a lot of the principles that we've been advocating for the last 10 years, and the need for us to advocate for them will be maybe less needed. But I think Charlotte will still need to grow in a smarter and smarter way every year as land becomes less available and resources become spread across more and more people.
What's your advice to someone who might be thinking about starting up something similar in their community? Maybe they haven't got as identifiable a resource as a sustainability group or a focal point in their organization. What would you tell someone to do next if they told you, I think I want to start my city's version of Sustain Charlotte?
Well, you know, one thing I did I didn't mention before I decided to, you know, launch Sustain Charlotte, I had one-on-one conversations with a lot of different people who had been living in Charlotte longer than I had. And I wanted to make sure that an organization like this, one, was needed and didn't already exist, and maybe I just hadn't heard about it. I was pretty sure it didn't exist, but I didn't assume that. I talked to a lot of people and said, hey, does anything like this exist? And if it doesn't, should it? And that was really informative, and that confirmed for me there was a need. I didn't just use my own judgment on that. I asked a lot of people. I really spent the better part of a year talking to people one-on-one about that over coffee. So I think one would just, you know, sort of do that market research to use, you know, business speak, make sure there really is a market for what you want to do. I would say one mistake I made perhaps I would have done differently is, you know, not having an MBA, not, you know, having a business background. I never had a business plan. I never put down in writing what I want to do and how I want to fund it. And so the funding piece, I think, was more difficult than it would have been had I done that. You know, when I sat down with a potential donor in those early years, you know, I didn't even have like a one pager to put in front of them at the very beginning. I just would verbally tell them all the things I had in my head and my vision and what, you know, what Sustain Charlotte could do. And I learned, you know, most people, if they're going to put money towards something, they need a little more than, you know, what's bouncing around inside your head. And so it may sound pretty elementary, but definitely put down in writing what you want to do and have some sort of a business plan to avoid the frustrations of, you know, having lots of people tell you no and wondering why they're saying no. You know, having that sort of business-minded approach, I think, is really important in thinking through how you're going to fund these big ideas.
I think it's also important that when you're having so many conversations with folks, it's good to have that sense of what's the next action that you want them to take. How did you know that you were speaking to enough people? Or is there a danger that you might spend so much time in that initial research phase, you might not actually get to the next phase?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I think that, you know, for me, that when I would talk to people about this idea, you know, I had almost no one tell me we don't need this. I mean, there was almost universal enthusiasm for this idea. And I had this visioning workshop in mind during most of those conversations. I was able to sort of say to them, well, hey, I'm thinking about having this visioning workshop, and I'd love for you to be there. You know, which helped with having really good attendance at our first event. So I think that's a great point about giving people something specific they can do. But I don't know, you know, what the magic number is there. I mean, for me, it was, I think, realizing there's something here. You know, I've heard from enough people in the know that this is needed, that I should give this a go. But you know, it's been a while now. I can't remember. Some of the details are a little fuzzy, but I think if I had been hearing from lots of people, you know, I just don't think this is needed. You know, hopefully I would have had the sense to drop it. I don't know if I would have or not, but it was pretty clear there was interest.
Well, it sounds like that consensus built into something pretty remarkable. And the years fly by so fast. 2030 will be here pretty quickly. But I know we've got a lot of listeners that thank you for everything that you're doing to keep the Queen City so fantastic. Shannon Binns from Sustain Charlotte, thanks so much for joining us on The Build.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. I enjoyed it.
Thanks again for listening to this episode of The Build. Our talent coordinator is Nicole Hubbard. Our production team for this episode included Leah Gruber, Amelia Lohman, and April Smith. Podfly Productions manages our post-production. Our theme music is performed by Arrows and Sound. Our director of operations is Katie Cohen-Zonizer, and our executive producer is Lori Taylor. I'm Joe Taylor Jr.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Build. We hope you'll share this series with your friends and provide us with feedback on the iTunes Store. You can also subscribe to weekly updates and learn more about upcoming guests by visiting our show page at thebuild.biz. This has been a 2820 radio production.